This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 444 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from Melbourne, Victoria, via Skype,
yeah,
from
CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au.
It is Mr. Glyn Lavender.
The podcast will be shorter, and everyone will be happy if the intro wasn't so long. Just say it's Bruce and Glyn again. Next.
Mate, it's the only time I get to speak.
In fact, you say we're back.
How are you?
In fact, don't even just to start talking, okay, on this episode.
Yeah. How's your week been?
7 days.
Mm-hmm. Is that the best you can say about it, is it?
Well, school holidays. That's the second week of school holidays.
Right. Okay.
I'm exhausted.
Of course.
Where these kids get the energy from. It's like I've been...
They sap it out of you, mate.
Running around here. Oh, it didn't take much. I always wanted to sleep my way to the top, but my alarm clock kept waking me up. It's just terrible. It's just no hope of sleep my way to the top. I'm not even sure how that whole system even works, quite frankly.
No.
But still. No, it's been all right. Yeah, just lots of kid stuff.
Yep.
Still dying from man flu.
Right.
But other than that, it's good. I've got 3 more days of school holidays and I'm rid of them.
Right.
Start concentrating on. I'm up to Ayers Rock next week for 2 days. So I've got to get my head around that. So I've got to get rid of the kids and start thinking about photography again. So
is that to run workshops?
I'm being employed by a guy to help him take a photograph.
Wow. Okay. Not landscape.
A landscape,
yeah, right.
A photo of Ayers Rock.
Oh, okay.
He's doing an exhibition on legal cases in Australia.
Right.
And I've been employed. Yeah, you know, he's done several days with me where we've got a different locations photographing either buildings or companies or locations of significant legal impact in Australia.
Right. Okay.
We're doing the Azaria Chamberlain next week.
Oh, so, wow! Wow.
So he gets up there with his point-and-shoot camera, and he aims, and I just kind of move his wrist by about 0.5 centimetre, and he takes the photo. Job done.
Right. Nice work.
2 days, 2 days of stress.
Nice work if you can get it.
Oh, dear. Lovely guy. But if that's what gives him the confidence to do it, yeah, I'm all for it. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'll carry his bags if that's what it takes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I'll be away for next week's episode. That means we might be able to record later in the week. Let's see how it goes.
Sure,
with your week, my week, and so on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but other than that, nothing. I did another fitness muscle shoot last Saturday morning for a friend.
Yep.
The model I'd used in the past, and I owed him a favour, so we popped out and not as happy as the last one I did. I just couldn't get in the flow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that happens. That happens some days.
Yeah, the shots all look fine, but there's no soul in them.
Right.
Yeah, there's no lifeless.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, nothing. Yeah, another day of nothing photos for no reason. So speaking of which,
yeah,
just going off tap, I was on Facebook yesterday, or it might have been the day before, and I saw this post on Digital Photography School.
Right.
And I'm not sure why, but I read it. Which is unlikely. But I thought I want to read that, talking about lifeless, soulless photos. I want to read this out.
Okay.
The headline was Stuck.
Right.
Okay. Hey, everyone. I'm Micah, and I'm failing as a photographer. A little bit of background. I'm a 17-year-old high school senior.
Yeah.
17-year-old high school senior who fell in love with photography around the age of 10. The day I picked up a camera for the first time, I was obsessed. It took a little while to get used to the feeling of my parents' Canon Rebel XTi between my grubby little fingers, but before too long, I was lugging that thing all over the place, taking photos of anything and everything, having the time of my life. Little 10-year-old. Fast forward 7 years. I'm getting ready to enter my last year of high school, and I'm still super passionate about photography. I just finished paying off my debt to my parents after buying my first ever camera, a Canon 5D Mark III, 2 years back. I spent the last couple of years watching hundreds of YouTube videos on photography, actively following my favorite photographers on YouTube, on social media, browsing thousands of articles, and sifting through countless emails from photography mailing lists. I've shot pictures of anything and everything that comes my way. It's been so much fun learning and experiencing this thing called photography. Recently, however, this all turned upside down when I decided to sit down with my laptop and go through my images from all those years of shooting. As I flipped through some of the earliest photos I ever took, I chuckled at the naivety of my shots. But as I passed through their eldest photos into the newer ones, the chuckle quickly turned into chagrin as I realised that the recent ones looked near identical to the ones I'd taken 5 years ago. Of course, they were better from a technical aspect, and there were a few good shots where I got really lucky, but the majority were so flat and lifeless, I was devastated. I've put hundreds of hours into this. Ever since I picked up the camera, photography has been my dream. But I got so caught up in myself that I never stopped for a second to assess where I was headed. And that's why I am where I am, stuck in a rut, trapped in the childish cluelessness of my past. I no doubt consider myself above the amateur and perhaps even call myself a seasoned hobbyist. But what's in a name? I have an incredible creative eye, we'll be the judge of that, and I see beauty everywhere around me. But as soon as I bring the camera up to my face, I'm held back. So I'm turning to you guys to ask you, at what point did you turn from the clueless tourist snapping photos to where you are at now? Not when others saw you as you are now, but when you truly felt that you'd overcome everything that was holding you back. And if you're not past that point yet, what's holding you back? This next year, I'm trying my best to leave the past behind and begin my pursuit of photography all over again. But this time, I want to do it right. So I need your ideas. I don't care how absurd they are. Everything that has helped you develop, mature, or to evolve as a photographer, whether it be a job doing grunt work in a studio or a favorite photography exercise or a book that totally transformed your photography life or a favorite podcast, to mention ours, and that won't help him, a TV show, YouTube channel, or a list of 47 different things that all made an impact on you. I can't wait to hear them all. And a huge heartfelt thanks to everyone out there who took the time to read this and pass on their ideas.
Right.
Now, first and foremost, that is an incredibly eloquent 17-year-old.
Yes, I was thinking exactly that.
Yeah, and pretty good introspection about and looking back and, you know, deciding where his work has gone and what his quality has developed and so on. So I was really impressed with that. I think he's been a bit hard on himself, but I was quite impressed with all that. So he's based. So I messaged him to find out where he was, because it doesn't say where he's based in there. He's based in Syracuse, New York.
Right.
So if you have any listeners out that kind of way,
yep,
who would say, hey, I wouldn't mind taking this young punk under my wings for a day out or something,
yep,
get in touch.
Yeah.
I got in touch with Tamron USA and said, here's a kid that we could do something with.
Right.
You know, maybe if we have any reps or anyone out that way who could, similar, put the kid under their wing for a couple of days, set him on a challenge with a lens to test something, you know, give him a reason to shoot.
Yep.
And maybe help him get past it, you know, give him a few tricks and lighting and stuff. So I'm waiting to hear back from the kid to get his email address so I can get Tamron in touch with him, because they're keen to do something, which is good.
Nice.
But I think it'd be really nice if we have any of our listeners out there who could, you know, throw him a few ideas. Maybe let us know in the podcast and we can send them to him.
Yep.
But I thought undue pressure on himself. But you can imagine, though, if you're 17 and fairly mature, which the kid obviously is, and you've been doing something for 7 years, which is basically your entire life at that stage.
It's half of his life again since he picked up the camera, almost.
And realistically, you don't remember much of those years before. So all his remembrances of now – his life had photography involved in it. And imagine you don't feel that you're improving.
Yeah.
But it's your passion. I think part of his problem is he's watching thousands of videos and articles. I think he's, you know, overdoing it. But I understand the passion.
Yep.
I applaud the passion. And I don't think necessarily getting onto a group with thousands of members asking for them to throw 1,000 ideas isn't going to help him either.
No.
Which is why I'm saying if we can find someone out that way who can, because I think hanging out with someone more experienced who's not a camera club mentality, not there's anything wrong with that for any of our listeners, camera clubs. I think it would be a really cool kind of thing to do. So it's a project I'd like just to keep an eye on. So his name is Micah.
Nice.
But, yeah. So, and he's only moved to Syracuse, New York a couple of months ago with his family, so he's actually new to that area.
All the more reason to get out and shoot, because everything's new and different.
Exactly, yeah. So anyway, listeners, if there's anything out there, let us know.
Nice.
That was it.
Nice.
That was my bit of actual interesting stuff about photography for the week.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's it. We go home now?
Yeah.
You're done?
Don't want to cover any stories?
Well, our listeners are the ones who sent them in.
Yeah.
So we're just saying them back to them.
Well, to all the other people who didn't send it in.
Well, we could, it'd probably be quicker just to mail it to them.
Maybe it would.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You can type in three names. Not that hard. I mean, I'm sure it takes long to edit and mix the, I don't know what you do with the soundy bit stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure it takes longer to do that than to send the email to the listeners.
Probably.
We could just send them this list. Say, this is what we would have talked about.
That's right.
Have we been not so lazy? Yeah. Lynn's trying to sleep himself to the top again, and he was asleep at the time. Yeah, something like that.
Excellent.
So we're doing stories.
Excellent, yes. So what do you got on your list?
Well, here's another thing we did during the week, which was kind of photography related.
Yeah.
And had an interesting little side anecdote to go with.
Right.
So I think it was Saturday morning, me and the girls.
Yeah.
Saturday afternoon, not that it's important. Recently.
Yeah.
Recently, the girls and I went down to watch my football team's seconds team play.
Oh, okay.
Because a player was returning after a seven-month injury.
No. Wasn't it 740 days? It was over two years or something?
No.
Oh, no. Sorry, that's a Hawthorn player. Sorry. Wrong player.
So in early this year, one of my team, North Melbourne's major players, threw himself off a bridge to try and kill himself.
Oh, jeez.
And plummeted who knows how many metres and landed in on the land rather than the water.
Right.
And basically destroyed his pelvis and just smashed himself up and other bodily injuries as well, but survived. He was found by police because someone saw him jump.
Right.
Found by police under the bridge and taken to hospital. Was told he'd never walk again. Major internal injuries, many, many surgeries, 16-centimetre pins put in each hip.
Whoa.
So, yeah, some serious bit of metal put inside there. And 7 months to the date, give or take, he returned for his first play at the seconds level, not the senior elite level yet, but at the second level. His first return to playing elite sport.
Wow. Having been told he would never walk again.
Yeah, an astounding type. I mean, one of the players related a story during the week. They went to visit him in hospital, and he was really upbeat this particular day because he had walked 15 metres with a walking frame.
Yeah, right.
And it only took him 15 minutes.
Wow.
To walk 15 metres, but that was like, they had to teach him how to walk again.
Yeah,
and
right.
There's this guy going into one of the most combative physical games in the world, team sport games in the world, with this background, So anyway, so big support. We want to go down to support. And so the girls made up some big signs, welcome back, Magic, and all that kind of stuff. And,
oh, okay, yeah.
So we get down there on the ground, and they're ushered onto the ground to be part of the cordon to have him as the players run out.
Oh, okay.
Which is science. That was pretty cool. Then one TV channel wanted to interview them, and then film them, and then newspapers, and then some press guys with their cameras, and then another TV crew, and then another TV crew, and then another newspaper, and then another set of photographers. They were all over the media on the weekend, my kids.
Wow.
But halfway through the game, we're sitting there at one end of the ground, and this guy came up to me and said, excuse me, I'm such and such from the Australian newspaper. Yeah, I see you're down the other end of the game, the other quarter, now you're up this end, what are you doing? And so they explained, we were following the player to support him. He goes, can I ask you, can I interview you? So we had a good chat for 10 or 15 minutes. He was a lovely guy, really lovely guy. And he goes, I've got no photographer with me to shoot, so I can't take any photos. I said, the bloody budget cuts. I said, don't you just shoot with your iPhone? So we got into this discussion about how disappointed the editors are with the quality of photographs that these reporters bring back.
Yeah, right.
He says, we tried. We tried taking photos, but they were never happy with them.
Wow. Surprise, surprise.
Exactly. This is why I'm bringing it up, is this whole thing, with everything we said, but this is actually a reporter, actually, you know, first-hand experience telling me this for the first time. And that's, which he says, and I said to him, I've got a pen, doesn't mean I can write.
Yeah.
You know, you camera doesn't mean you can shoot.
Yeah.
Because exactly. So we had it was really, really good to get a first-hand perspective of a reporter who now a lot of his articles have no accompanying imagery.
Wow.
Because he can't shoot.
Wow.
But he can write, but on an occasion where the rest of the media, they had taken photos, and there were actually photographers, employed photographers there shooting.
Yeah.
And you can see some they were on their major newspaper, they're in there, and the shot was obviously with a 70-200 2.8, lovely blurred out oval in the background, and they stood out like great. And I'm thinking, well, if you're competing with either
with that,
shoot
cam,
or an iPhone, your photos are going to look garbage, you know?
Yeah.
But it'd be very, very interesting to see how all these cuts are impacting these guys. I thought it was quite interesting.
It just baffles the mind that the bean counters don't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
Do people miss the images? Who knows, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll go back to the way, newspapers were 150 years ago, where there weren't any photos.
Even Playboy doesn't have images anymore.
I wouldn't know. I haven't looked.
I haven't looked either, but apparently they don't have nudes. I'm serious. Apparently
really?
They don't have. Apparently.
Right. Okay.
I don't know if they've got other types of photos or. I know they've got articles. They've always had articles. And the articles in Playboy have traditionally been very good.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually good journalism, but I have no idea. But as far as I knew, they stopped doing the photos a couple of years ago.
Wow.
To be honest, I couldn't even tell you if Playboy is a magazine, you could even buy it anymore. I wouldn't know. But
I have no idea.
Maybe one of our listeners probably wouldn't volunteer that information. But yeah, that's a fascinating thing in itself, that they stopped doing photographs.
Yeah.
The thing that made them, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what else have I got? I saw, I was watching a documentary on heroin the other day.
Okay.
And it certainly helped. No, I was watching a documentary on these scientists who developed a new camera.
Right.
That can record light moving.
Okay.
So they can actually photograph or video or do a sequence of photos and turn them into a video of a photon of light moving.
What?
So imagine the frame rate we're talking about here.
It would be insanely fast.
1 trillionth of a second. So it's shooting 1 trillion frames a second.
Does it really, or is it only capable of shooting one frame in a second?
Oh, it shoots a trillion frames a second.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's and they show the footage of these light. I mean, it's weird ass and doesn't really make any sense. And the technology and trying to understand how they're doing what they're doing doesn't make any sense to me either, because I only half read the article.
Okay.
I put an article on it on today's podcast, but I watched the documentary, which was a little bit more cohesive because they're using more words and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a thing there from the Atlantic magazine explaining all about the camera show, and they're showing a YouTube video of the process.
Right.
So I thought I could do some quite cool shots at a trillion frames a second.
Okay, but I'll have to watch the YouTube video because I don't understand how. Anyway, whatever.
How fast is that? We have to make you do work and look at stuff. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, okay.
So that was pretty good. Then I got to say, I found it highly amusing that I saw an announcement from Yongnuo.
Yeah.
Yongnuo releasing a new flash.
Right.
Called the YN200.
Okay.
Which looks exactly like the Godox. it's like, okay, so.
Same form
GoPro
factor.
Suing Godox. Now Godox will have to sue Yongnuo.
Sorry, who's suing Godox?
Remember we did the article a week or so ago where Profoto were.
Oh, that's
suing
right. Yes, yeah.
To the Roundhead Flash.
Yep.
Well, now these are going to have to be suing these guys. They couldn't even come up with a new bloody model number. They still get the same 200. I mean, it's.
But I think that's always been Yongnuo's business model, is to retain the number of the product they've ripped off so that they confuse the market. And it's worked beautifully.
So a Chinese company that's renowned for knocking off is now being knocked off by a Chinese company that's renowned for knocking off.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Knock off the knockoffs.
That's it.
It's the way of doing things, the way of doing biz.
Well, that's the thing. And I mean, I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before, that in China, it's part of their culture that if you can create something that is indistinguishable from the original, as in you are able to duplicate the work of some other artist to the point where it's, you know, near enough impossible to tell the difference between your work and the original work, then you are considered to be as skilled as the original artist. And they don't have a concept of theft of IP.
And maybe they should.
Well, I guess if they want to play on the world economic stage, they need to understand that other countries have that concept.
Takes some objection to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I thought was kind of funny. So speaking of copyright, then there was this article in Petapixel.
Oh yes,
the big issue magazine in the UK.
Yeah,
having a photo on its front cover, which when the artist saw it, goes, well, I haven't given permission for that image to be used, and so he's got his management company to get in touch, and they said, well, we got it from Alamy, the stock agency. And Alamy, go and check their file. And what it was somebody's taken a photo of this photo in a gallery, and put that photo of the photo up onto the stock library. And they've used, in all good faith, the one from the stock library. But of course, it's a photo of a photo.
Yep.
What a crazy ass world.
Yep.
I mean, what an absolutely crazy ass world we live in with that sort of stuff. Yeah. Who does that? Who goes and it's like going to take a photo of the Mona Lisa and then putting it up on the stock and say, I did that.
Yeah, exactly.
Go photograph a Banksy. Yeah, that's my work right there. Look at that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a photocopier. Yeah, basically. Just call me Xerox. Yeah. I just don't understand why. What do you hope to get out of it? Yeah, nah. Other than a whole heap of angst.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
And I came across this funny article this week on Petapixel, but I saw it in a few other places, regarding, it's basically going on about the Instagram world. People see these photos on Instagram or social media, go, oh, I want to go there and do that photo. And, oh, you know, they go and copy the photos.
Right.
And this was all about the Gates of Heaven in Bali. Do you know the Gates of Heaven?
No, I don't.
Click the link and have a look at the photos.
Okay.
And you may have seen the photos. It's a popular spot. I've seen it, you know, quite a few times myself.
Okay.
But the whole thing is everyone's going there thinking there's water at this site.
Oh.
And they get this beautiful reflection.
Right.
But all it is some guy sits in a chair with a piece of reflective glass.
Oh.
And he holds your phone in just the right spot to get the reflection, and you pay a couple of bucks for the photo.
Oh, you're kidding.
And people get there, no, I'm really upset that this isn't real. The thing is, the Gates of Heaven, though, they are, it's a cool location even without the reflection.
Yeah.
But people have seen this and they go there and try and copy and they have all these ideas of what they're going to do. And then the reality when they get there, you know. And there's this Instagram post here. My hopes and dreams were shattered when I found out the water at the Gates of Heaven is actually just a piece of glass under an iPhone. Her hopes and dreams were shattered.
Good.
You know, it's really?
Yes, good.
You want to go there? Your hopes and dreams are to go and copy something thousands of other people have done.
Exactly.
That's my hopes. Exactly.
But I mean, it's almost as bad as the story we had a couple of months ago about trying to shoot in Antelope Canyon.
Yeah, exactly.
And about how, you know, you never get to walk through it, you know, and be the only person there because they're taking groups of 50 photographers through at a time, and there's a guy who throws the dirt in the air so that you get the, you know, the dust cloud hanging in the air through the rays of light. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that just kind of destroyed the wonder of all those amazing images that I'd seen, you know. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, it's the way of modern life, I'm afraid, isn't it? Yeah. We've seen these iconic photos and now we all want these photos, you know.
Yeah,
there's another article in that one about the fake holy men of Varanasi.
Oh, okay.
Which is true. I mean, most of the holy men in Varanasi, whilst that not all are fake, they're all pay to play.
Oh, okay.
So you know, if you're wanting to take a photo, it's going to cost you a few bucks.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Yep.
But now, of course, everyone wants that same iconic image of the same crusty guy in the front of a in front of a boat on the Ganges. You know, yeah. The reality's gone.
Yeah.
To the point, I mean, I've photographed a few of these guys over the time, and you keep seeing their faces come up on the Instagram. Oh, there he is again! Look, there he is. It's the same if you ever look at photos of from Cuba, from Havana.
Right.
And you see the oldies with the big cigars. Go and look on the internet. You'll find them over and over and right. over. That's their job, to be there to be photographed, you know.
They're Instagram influencers.
Exactly. The last thing I've got was... is one of, once again, the old man grumble
okay.
of what's happening in to the world,
right.
basically.
Yep.
There's another Petapixar article, and I'm just going to open it up myself.
The heading is, I shot the Boston 4th of July fireworks spectacular on expired film.
Now, straight away,
yeah.
who the f*** cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would anyone think that's worthy of an article? I shot fireworks on expired film. Wow.
Living on the edge.
Whoopsie effing dude. You know? And then he goes to show photos he's done with his Sony A7 II with a Canon FD lens adapter. So he's using old school lenses on his modern camera.
Right.
Comparing it to the faded, lifeless, colorless photos taken with his film. Wow.
Right.
I don't know. That's what you want out of fireworks. Faded, lifeless, colorless. You know? And then to do a whole article. But as usual with these things, my favorite part of bringing it out is the comments.
Oh, okay.
And the stuff like, I shot Boston film, 4th of July fireworks spectacular on expired film. Makes me want to open the article with connected with a dial-up modem. Yeah, which looked pretty good. But the best one was, I made Gordon Ramsay's recipe for beef Wellington with expired beef. Oh, God. It's And there's a do it on an expired sensor or one in a camera body that hasn't received a firmware update in years. Bear the results.
Oh, dear.
It's just ridiculous. And once again, this is what you wonder why our podcast sucks. When this is all the world news we have to get from is people going crud.
Yeah.
That's my grumble. I mean, I did an old man Facebook grumble rant today because I'm sick and tired on Facebook of when people are trying to say he's, as in he is,
yeah.
abbreviation he's, they're writing his.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's just dry. And I've been noticing everywhere. And I said to my wife, have you noticed? Because, yes, I've noticed that. And yeah. she's been noticing it's driving her bloody crazy as well.
Yeah, right. I haven't seen that.
But you'll see it now, Bruce. Everywhere.
I'm sure I will.
You know what it's like, yeah?
Yep.
You don't know it's there, but as soon as it's pointed out to you, start seeing it. Yes. So you can thank me for that later.
Thank you.
Yes. So what have you got to talk about?
So we got a story from Steve Peters. This hipster Barbie account perfectly mocks every annoying person on Instagram. And basically, this is a female photographer from Oregon, wedding photographer, who told BuzzFeed News she wanted to remain anonymous. But basically what she's done is she's got a Barbie doll and she puts this Barbie doll in different clothes, in different locations, and takes these photos and puts them on Instagram with all these, you know, inane comments that your quote unquote influencers are always posting. It's very funny.
I've sat in coffee shops and watched people set their coffee on the floor while they stand on the chair just to make their morning cup of coffee appear more interesting than it really is. That's very funny. You could have a lot of fun with that, couldn't you?
There'd absolutely.
Be an awful lot of ideas for, you know, every my father-in-law tonight sent through from my daughter, my eldest daughter. He goes, oh, I've just seen this photograph that your daughter might love because it's about astronomy. My daughter loves astronomy. He goes, it's a Mars right next to the Milky Way. And it's a photo of a Mars bar, chocolate bar next to a Milky Way. There's that kind of stuff, you know. We could do a photos of the Milky Way chocolate bar over these iconic locations. Oh, nice. I'll do that. Oh, yeah. That's, that
could be Adam sent through a bunch of stories. One was man rediscovers 1970s Sydney street photos in an old cupboard. I don't know why Adam found this one to be interesting now, because this blog post dates from 2014. But anyway, so they're even older now, so it gives the story even more cred.
Not only that, Adam's also older now, too.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, a bunch of black and white photos from the streets of Sydney in the 70s. So,
but they're not any good.
Well, it's street photography.
I say no more than that. But the street photography and street photography, and this is literally street photography.
They're just snapshots. Yeah.
Oh, actually, there's one really good one.
Okay.
The last one in the article.
Yeah, the guy with his head down.
One that speaks to me. The last one. It's called The Unseen Hand.
Yeah.
But the fact there's a guy there with a hat and he's looking down and he can't see his face, but you can see his hands.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that's really good. So I like that. That's clever. Yeah, whether it's staged or so, who knows? But yeah, there's not an awful lot of. I mean, the telephone booths in the subway is okay.
Yep.
Probably the next best one is all the ladies sitting around with their thermoses.
Yes,
you know, kind of a world lost. But the rest, but yeah. Here's the thing: maybe they would have had more impact if they showed more of the locations so you could see the change of look. Because people aren't necessarily that much different other than a bit of their clothing.
Yep.
But the scenery, you know, the shops, the advertising, all that kind of stuff brings much more of a time. But I mean, this guy could have been using expired film and photographing photographing these people. But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, but that Unseen Hand one's really cool. So.
Yeah.
Thanks for being 4 or 5 years too late there, Adam. Appreciate it.
The next one is how I made an impossible photo of the Apollo 4 launch in 1967.
So it must be, if he's doing it now, that is impossible.
Yeah, exactly. A very, very fast shutter speed. This guy actually shot with infrared film looking into the sun as the rocket took off. From whichever launch site it was in Canaveral in Florida. And, yeah, just ended up with some really interesting colours, lots of mauves and purple in the sky.
It's like he's using expired film.
It's almost like that.
So why was it impossible? Why was it an impossible photo?
Well, simply because everyone had said to him, you can't do a long-timed exposure looking towards the sun. You've only got to look at the frame to see that for the majority of this exposure, the sun was probably behind the cloud bank on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And then right at the last fraction of a second of the exposure, the sun's come out and that's when he's, you know, closed the shutter. That's my guess.
Yeah. I mean, he could have just scratched the neg. Is that the cynicism?
Maybe.
For all intents and purposes, that's just a scratch in the negative, isn't it, really?
You're talking about the streak of light.
Well, no. Well, that's actually the rocket going up is a straight line of air. That could just be a scratch. It could be faking it.
It could be.
He could have shot it now.
That was photoshopped, mate. It was photoshopped.
You pitched him in the photoshop
in 1967. The next story from Adam was goodbye aberration. Physicist
is Adam leaving us?
No. Physicist
said goodbye aberration. Aberration.
Physicist solves 2,000-year-old optical problem. So the story goes that, you know, we have chromatic aberration, which occurs because of the spherical nature of the front of a lens. I can tell, Glenn, you're intrigued already. I can tell. You're loving it. I've got to actually, there's a paragraph in here that I have to get you to read in your nerd voice. So if you scroll down to where you see the big white picture that says Formula General Para Disina Una Lente Singlet Blasferica, just above that, starting from in this equation.
In this equation, we describe how the shape of the second spherical surface of the given lens should be given the first surface, which is provided by the user as well as the object image distance. explains Gonzalez Acuna. The second surface is such that it corrects all the aberration generated by the first surface, and the spherical aberration is eliminated. What did he say?
So basically what they've done is they've put two different coatings on the front element of the lens, and the coatings are at 90 degrees to each other.
Polarizing film.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. But obviously there's more to it than that. But, yeah, they're excited about it.
It's kind of polarizing out that light.
Yeah, but apparently what this does is allow sharper focus out to the edges of the frame, not just limited to the center of the frame.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
I do like this comment here, though. This is actually a part of the article.
Yeah.
Regardless, I can only wish Rafael Gonzalez Acuna, Alejandro Yaparo Romo, and Julio Gutierrez Vega a long and healthy life. Given enough time, maybe they can also solve the one memory card slot problem on the Nikon
Z7. Yes.
Yes. To be fair, that one's been around for less than a year.
Yeah, and there was another great line earlier in the article which says, afterwards, the duo ran a simulation and calculated the efficacy with 500 rays, and the resulting average satisfaction for all examples was 99.999999999%, which of course is great news for gear reviewers on YouTube, as they'll still be able to argue about the 0.00000001% of sharpness difference amongst lens brands.
Oh, it's so true.
Totally. So good chuckle out of that one.
Funny stuff.
The next one from Adam was about the photographer who set a long time lapse going in his front yard at 1 o'clock in the morning, went to sleep, and when he woke up and checked the footage, and he wasn't shooting video. What he was doing was shooting 8-second exposures every 9 seconds. But in the midst of this shoot sequence, he captured what's called a bolide. And essentially, it is a meteor that impacts with the Earth's atmosphere at just the right angle so that it bursts into this bright flame. And yeah, he just quite accidentally just fluked catching one of these things hitting the atmosphere within the confines of his 24mm composition. So it was a pretty cool little video.
Interesting, isn't it? Bolide, you say?
Well, I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced. It's B-O-L-I-D-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it impacted with the, you know, the atmosphere, burst into this massive explosion. And then what they refer to as a persistent train is kind of this cloud of dust and stuff that gets lit up by the atmosphere and sort of, you know, drifts away from the...
It's like a smoke trail.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah. So, just the luck of the draw, I guess.
Of course, it's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah. And the last one from Adam. This photo project empowers you to rock your ugly and beat your body insecurities, mildly NSFW. And there's a really interesting series of images of people who, you know, have certain parts of their body that they're not happy with or that they're insecure about, and this photographer has made it a portfolio of images based on exactly that. And it all started with this guy who had been very fit as a teenager and as a, you know, early 20-something, had been Sportsman of the Year for 4 years in a row when he was at high school. And then by the time he got to 31, he'd had some injuries which had kept him out of the gym and meant that he, you know, ended up putting on a little bit of weight. And I mean, he's still not fat by any, you know, stretch of the imagination. But for him, it was a dramatic change in his body and his perception of his body, and this kind of started the ball rolling. And it's an interesting collection of images.
Oh, cool.
And some great stories that go along with them. So yeah,
good on him.
Thank you, Adam. And then there was a couple of stories that I found just this evening, just before we started recording.
Last minute panic.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
This one, I don't know what to think about this. Canon PowerShot G7X Mark III, I think they're doing a marketing number on Olympus. Oh, Olympus there, mate. Let's you shoot 4K and vertical videos. What the what?
It beggars, doesn't it? Beggars belief.
Doesn't every camera let you shoot vertical video if you just rotate at 90 degrees?
No.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, no.
Okay.
What part of no you're struggling with, dude? The thing is, yes, you can rotate at 90 degrees, but when you play it back, it's sideways on your television.
Right.
And not full screen.
Right.
So, and if you put it on your phone, watch it on your phone, it would be sideways on your phone. So you, imagine your phone is vertical. It would be horizontal the wrong way on your phone. It wouldn't be full screen on your phone.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay, and if you went to rotate your phone, it would flip.
Right.
So what they were obviously the only reason they're doing this is to allow when they transfer. I'm assuming this camera has wireless transfer to their phones.
Right.
People video this thing vertical video and then put it onto their phones and watch it on their phones and iPads, etc.
Right.
That's the only thing I can imagine there'd be any possible need for it.
Right. Idiots. Absolute idiots.
One of those things that just because you can.
Doesn't mean you should.
Yeah,
sure. Unfreaking believable. Anyway, and the last thing that I've got, Moment, as that is the name of the company.
Yeah.
And I grabbed this because you gave us a story a week or two back about an anamorphic lens for your iPhone.
That's right.
Well, these guys have launched the world's first anamorphic lens for consumer drones.
And launching is the right thing because it's going to be up in the air.
That's right. Yeah, so anyway.
So that's fascinating, isn't it?
That is
so fascinating. Everyone's enamored with that.
They are. So I just saw that the fact that it was an anamorphic lens and went, oh, Glenn was talking about that with the iPhone, so I thought I'd just throw that in there.
Yeah, I was going to do the same, but I thought that's just too boring, so I didn't.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's
it. I've got one other link for you I'm going to send through.
Oh, okay.
There's another YouTube video of another bolide explosion.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, well, I'll...
Okay, if you get enough videos, you could do like a music video with them. It'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Right. It kind of remind me of something from the 70s, you know, those kind of crazy background swirly stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a lava lamp.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well,
do you remember the Knock, Knock, Knock on Wood film clip?
I can't say that I do. I know the song, but
maybe we should put the link for that in the video too, and I reckon we can visualize. Yeah.
Knock on Wood, that was Amy Stewart.
Amy Stewart, yes. By chance, I saw that video last week on the Top 40 One-Hit Wonders.
Oh, okay. Right.
Which was number 14 or something.
Right.
Know, which is pretty good.
Cool.
Yes, we're off snow hunting tomorrow. So it's going to be cold enough, it's going to snow.
Right, so it shouldn't be too hard to find then.
Where, if you recall back into the heat of summer, when summer was at its absolute bakingest hottest, our air conditioner went on the fritz.
Oh, okay.
Well, today, it's the coldest of coldest cold. Heat has gone on the
fritz. Oh, you're kidding.
Give a sucker an even break. So we've gone from boiling to freezing now. It's just,
right.
The irony is not lost.
Hence why you can jump in the car for a couple of hours and stay warm.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. So where are you headed?
Up to a place called Trentham. Okay. If nothing else, if it all falls down in a heap, it's got a lovely bakery.
Oh, nice.
So I'm always partial to a country bakery, so yeah.
There is nothing better than walking into a bakery on a cold day when they're baking and there's just that aroma of fresh baked breads and pastries. And
you get the hot chocolate going and it's going to be a good old day out for the last day before school holidays finishes. So.
Beautiful.
And I'm kind of pleased because I'm running out of dad jokes. So yeah, I've been doing my daily Facebook dad jokes. I'm starting to run out. So it's school holidays almost over.
Sure. You know,
I'm almost at the desperate stage of having to use the what did the snail say when it was on the tortoise's back?
Okay.
Whee!
Of course. Thank you, mate.
All right, mate.
Have a good week.
On that low note.
See you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Now, one thing I didn't mention at the beginning of this episode was that we are going to have a guest, and it is a person who has appeared on this podcast as a guest in the past. And it is Mark Silber. He's got a new ebook about to hit the shelves, And so I thought we'd have him back on the podcast to tell us all about it. So, Mark Silber, welcome back to Shutters Inc.
Bruce, so happy to be with you. I wish I was actually on your side of the world doing a little surfing one of these days.
I don't think you want to be surfing down here at this moment because we're heading into our winter. So.
Oh, true. Boy, that would be pretty wild, I bet.
But, I've been down to the beach and there are guys that surf all year round here. So, you know, it's obviously not too cold for some people.
Yeah, well, we wear pretty thick wetsuits here as well, you know, so
yeah, right.
I'm used to it.
So you're in Southern California, if I remember correctly.
It's actually right in the middle of the state. It's Central California.
Oh, okay.
On the coast, a little town called Carmel, California.
Right.
And it's gorgeous. I can look out the window and see the ocean, take a little walk there with my dog every day.
That's nice. That
it
is
really
nice.
Is.
Yeah. I don't have a view of the ocean from where I live, but it's only about a 8 or 10 minute drive down to the beach from where I live. And I do the same yes. thing, you know, in the summer months, I'll take the dog down to the beach and go for a walk on the beach. It's great.
It is. It's an inspirational place. And I'm only, maybe 2 miles away from where Ansel Adams lived and still.
Oh, nice.
His son still lives there. And Edward Weston, same, right around the corner. His grandson lives there now. We have a lot of photographers and writers.
A lot of creative people in that part of the world, I'd say.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So just to remind everybody, we had you on the podcast. Oh, gee, I'm thinking it might be 2 years ago now. I don't know. When did your last book come out?
That was about a year ago in March or May. Let's see. When we might have done it, it was probably around May, maybe about a year ago.
Oh, okay. For me, it just seemed like it was longer ago than that, but fair enough. But you've got a new book that is about to come out called
Yes.
Create, Tools from Seriously Talented People to Unleash Your Creative Life.
Yes.
So this sounds like a great book. I've had a bit of a flick through it myself. And I had to bring up this quote that you had in the introduction from George Herbert. I love this. Do not wait. The time will never be just right. Start where you stand and work with whatever tools you may have at your command, and better tools will be found as you go along. That is gorgeous.
Isn't that great advice?
Otherwise,
you know, people get hung up on like, well, I have to do this and I have to learn that and I have to do these other things. And I've always been a believer of use whatever you've got to hand, whether it's an old Brownie box camera that I learned to photograph on and
yeah.
eventually moved into a 35mm Argus C3, remember those things?
I can't say that I do.
Okay, well, they called it the brick because it was this rectangular heavy box, but it was, you know, such an upgrade from the Brownie because you could actually focus and change your aperture. It was magical.
Right.
But that's a really good quote, and I think it's a good piece of advice to run your whole creative life by.
It really is, you know. I mean, I don't know if you recall, but my primary source of income is as an audio engineer. That's what I've done for 30 plus years. And, you know, I've often thought I'd love to run a business of recording and mixing music. And, you know, and I saw this quote in the front of the book and I thought, man, that is so relevant to me in my audio field, you know, more so than my photography stuff. But it is a great quote. And I think it's applicable to anyone, as you say, anyone in a creative sort of funk, and you can be stymied by that fear of, oh, I'm not prepared, or I don't have the things that I need. And, you know, that everything is contained in that quote. It's just get out there and do it with what you've got now.
And just keep working on it and making it better as you go. Absolutely.
Yep.
That's my theory too. That's my philosophy of
now,
pretty much everything.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I saw as a heading in your book, and I may not have written it exactly, but it was, why do you want to create?
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a great question. Did you have, can you concisely cover that?
Well, you know, this is under the heading of purpose. It's the whole idea of, you know, a person should work out what it is that they're trying to do. What is their purpose, whether it's whatever field? I mean, I wrote about creativity in general. We can narrow that to photography. You know, if one's going out to take photographs, it's a good idea to really take a look at what is it you're trying to come home with? You know, what's your purpose for this photographic journey? Or
yeah,
is it going to be something that's just a personal series of photographs, or are you trying to turn it into a photo essay? But it all boils down to this key concept of purpose, because, you know, I interviewed about 11 different really highly creative people. And even in addition to that, you know, my YouTube channel, I've interviewed hundreds of photographers over the years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really stands out about all these people is that they have a very strong purpose of where they're going and what they need to do to accomplish that. And that may be one of the key qualities that could set somebody apart from, you know, just being sort of an amateur versus really being a professional. And by professional, I don't even mean that's what you do to earn your living, but I mean you work to a professional standard.
Yeah.
And you're really dedicated to your craft.
Yeah, that's a great distinction to make, that professionalism isn't just earning a buck from it. It's the mindset you bring to that endeavor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's interesting that you should have brought up the interviews that you've done, because that was one of the things that I was intrigued by as I flicked through the PDF of this new book, is how many, I'll call them non-photographers, because they're people who, you know, they might enjoy photography, but they are not known as photographers, that you've interviewed who are part of this mm-hmm. book. You know, people like Keith Code from the California Superbike School, whose name I was familiar with because I read motorcycle magazines.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, musicians like David Campbell, TV personalities like Susie Coelho, Nancy Cartwright, who's the voice of Bart Simpson, and a bunch of other voices.
A whole bunch of voices. It's amazing how many voices.
She is phenomenal. But I was intrigued and surprised by the range and the scope of people that you've included interviews with in this book. Like, it's not just about photography.
Right. Well, that was my goal, and I'm glad that resonated for you. That was exactly what I wanted to cover, was a wide range of different creatives in so many different fields. And try to find out some of the commonality as well. You know, you have here Chris Burkhart, who is a photographer.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's saying something that David Campbell said about how you can spark creativity with your children. And, you know, for a lot of people, they don't know that David Campbell is Beck's father. Beck is obviously a pretty well-known
musician.
Recording artist.
Yeah.
Musician. And, you know, in that case, I asked him, so how did you foster his talent? Because I find Beck one of the most talented musicians that I've heard. You know, he can play, I don't know, a dozen instruments, and one album at least. He did everything on the album. I think he won a Grammy for it. But mainly, you know, I was trying to find what did these people do? These are remarkable people, but, you know, at the end of the day, Bruce, they turn out to be people just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, they have put their pants through, their legs through their pants the same way that you and I do, and drink a cup of tea just like we do, and have the same demons and problems that they have to overcome just like the rest of us.
Yeah, totally. There was another thing that I saw, a heading in the book that I saw, and it was stay on the path.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, the brief bit of the text that I read following that heading, you were talking about, you know, your previous business exploits in Silicon Valley and how you sort of woke up one day and realized that you were missing your creative side that, you know, had been a part of your life earlier in your life, and then business had kind of got in the way, and you made a conscious decision to come back to that. And it's not entirely related, but I've mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast. I came across this blog post a while back. And it was called the Helsinki bus terminal analogy, and this guy had written this blog post, and it was all about people who get started in photography and they will decide, oh, I want to be a wedding photographer. And so they start doing wedding photography, and then, you know, someone might criticize their, you know, their efforts and say, oh, you know, you're just copying, you know, Jasmine Starr, or you're just copying, you know, Jerry Gahonis, or whatever. And so then they think, oh, this has all been done before, I should try something else. So they'd decide, I'll be a real estate photographer or whatever. And the whole, the Helsinki bus station analogy was, it's like getting on one bus that leaves from the terminal. But the thing is, all the buses leave from the terminal together. And the longer you stay on the bus, the greater the chance that you will eventually get to a point where that's the only bus in the district, because all the other buses have peeled off in different directions to go elsewhere.
That's good.
And I thought that it's such a great analogy. But the stay on the path heading that I saw in your book just kind of reminded me of that. I'm not sure that they necessarily go hand in hand, but they are kind of related.
They are related. And you know, it's interesting. It also relates to advice Chris Burkhardt gave, which was, and I mentioned this later in the book too, is really figure out what your genre is so that you're not, you know, like, you're offering bus trips to everywhere. Well, okay. You know, it's like, yeah. Maybe you should specialize a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So, and if you get that genre like totally nailed down, of course you could add to it. But, you know, if you're trying to brand yourself and you're trying to get other people to realize what's different about you than everybody else, you're right. The longer you're on that bus, the more distinction there is.
Yeah.
And the more you really, you know, it is a long journey that we're into as far as creativity. It doesn't just take a day or two, you know, to figure out one of these crafts, you know. Oh. It has to be something that you're really dedicated to.
Exactly.
So I like that analogy. I'll have to look that blog post up.
Yeah, I'll flick you a link to it.
Okay, that'd be great.
But I guess, you know, what you're saying about, you know, these crafts don't come overnight, I guess that harkens back to the whole, you know, 10,000 images analogy. You know, your first 10,000 are your worst. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that one before.
I have, but, you know, I'd have to disagree with that. In my case, some of my best were in the book I took, you know, when I was a teenager. And I feel very lucky that I grew up in a school that really welcomed creativity, and I had sort of a clean slate. So when I got out there with a camera, I managed to come away with some pretty good images.
Nice. But
sometimes it works in the middle. Sometimes you just hit a point where you just go flat and find that you've just taken the same shot over and over again.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that does that? I mean,
it's, oh no, like, definitely not.
You know, the same sun coming through the trees, and you know, maybe it was great the first time you did it, but 3,000 shots later, it's like, it's a little overdone. It's a little stale.
Yeah.
So no matter what, you know, I think we have to constantly be raising the bar. Like one of the things, one of the quotes in here is, I always try to do what I can't do. And, you know, yeah, if you're pushing yourself like that and you're saying, okay, I don't know how to, you know, portraiture, for instance, if you're primarily a landscape photographer, push yourself a little bit, maybe get into portraiture. You know, Annie Leibovitz did just the opposite. She's known, obviously, for her celebrity portraits.
Yeah.
But then in one of her recent books, she put a lot of landscape photography in there because she really is trying to master that genre. So, but we'll never know of her. We'll never think of Annie Leibovitz as a landscape photographer. It just doesn't fit in her mind, you know?
No.
So that goes back to that other point of pick a position that you want people to have a kind of a place in their mind about what you do, and then just roll with it.
Yeah.
But I'm interested, you know, Keith is a good friend of mine, and he is just
right,
an amazing person.
Yeah, right.
He was probably my first interview for the book. If he wasn't, it was right up there.
Okay.
Kind of helped me sort of figure out how – I didn't know at the beginning how I was going to fit these interviews in.
Right.
I knew that I wanted to get a lot of different voices. And originally I was thinking, well, I'll just cut pieces of them of their interviews and put them wherever that made sense. And then I realized it was just going to be too hodgepodge that way. It was going to be too clipped up, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I'll try to fit the interviews into, you know, sort of what fits in between those particular chapters. And so I tried to do that, and that worked out much better, even though it's not an exact fit, but you know, I try to make it sort of resonate with whatever I was writing about at that time. But I'm really happy with how these interviews turned out.
Nice. Okay. And so the book is coming out July 23rd, I believe, is the date that we're...
That's right. It happens to be my birthday, my next birthday.
Ah, well, happy birthday for Ben.
Thank you. Yeah, my publisher gave me the choice of a couple of dates. I said, how about July 23rd? Why not?
Fantastic.
Why not have it on my birthday?
Why not? So the book will be available as a paperback or a Kindle edition through Amazon. And
that's right.
I'm assuming, Mark, that it will also be available through your website?
Yes. You can go to silverstudios.com. And you'll see a link to it at the top. One of the things that I've done with my previous books, and I'll do it again, is I created a resource page that links to all the different things that I mention in the book.
Right.
So if you want to dive in deeper, and you know, like for instance, I have a photograph of probably one of the first sort of easily available underwater cameras long before GoPro was the Nikonos.
Right.
By Nikon. And I had an opportunity, tell the story about how a teacher loaned me one of these and had some fun with it, dove under a frog swimming in a swimming pool. But I'll have a link to that. So if people want to dive in deeper into anything that I'm talking about, including, you know, if you want to find out more about Keith Code, here's his link, and any of these other people, because I want to make this data as accessible as possible.
Fantastic. All right, Mark, well, thank you for joining us on the podcast, and I wish you all the best with the new book.
Absolutely.
You can find Mark at silverstudios.com, or you should probably check out his YouTube channel, Advancing Your Photography, which is at youtube.com/MarkSilber. But that link will be in the show notes to this podcast. And Mark, thanks once again.
Bruce, thank you. Always my pleasure. And as I said, one of these days, look for me with my board and under my arm, and you'll have to point me in the right direction.
Fantastic, mate. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Alrighty. Well, I think that just about does it for this episode. As Glenn said, we may or may not get to record next week, so we'll just see how we go. Either way, I will speak to you in the next one.
Shutter Zinc.
Another audiotu.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersinpodcast.com.